Bridgman.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 1 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Women's Magazine.
Feminist women.
Mulheres feministas.
Zanone feminist.
Vanyu vachikonzero chevakadzi.
Nessa.
Mulheres feministas.
Yam femini. Fem activi.
Nari mukti.
Matapang na babae.
Kekchi mai.
Ka ishk.
This week on Women's Magazine.
It is my honor to present to you the President of the United States.
Thank you, Betty, for that introduction, for your extraordinary service.
I am still having first experiences at 96. I wake every morning and shoot out of bed because I can't wait to see what next week is. I don't expect to retire at all. I'm going to go straight from the park to the cemetery.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Women's Magazine. I'm Kate Raphael.
And I'm Sharon Savoda.
And this week on Women's Magazine, we will be talking with Betty Reed Soskin, who at 96 is the oldest living park ranger. We're going to hear about her life in activism, music, and more recently as the face of the Rosie the Riveter World War II Homefront National Historic Park in Richmond, California. We're offering Betty's memoir of her extraordinary life, which is called Sign My Name to Freedom, as a thank you gift for your pledge to KPFA today of just $125. We are really lucky to have this book to offer you. It's just come out, and you'll develop an appreciation for the ways in which women struggle and use their struggle to create something that will last for generations.
Yeah, that's true, Kate. She really does say that she is a living history herself. She's lived through generations of change. Her great-great-grandmother was a slave. And for her to be working full-time, as you heard, and I might add that we know it's not just a book, but also a signed copy of her book. And of course, she's young at heart, but we know that unfortunately, we don't live forever. So I think we're really blessed to have this as an opportunity to hear her voice and have this as a premium this year.
So you don't have to wait until the end of the show to make your pledge to KPFA and Women's Magazine. Show that you value this kind of programming. You can call us right now, 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732, or you can pledge securely online at kpfa.org. And we really, really appreciate anything that you can spare to help us keep this radio station going. As you have heard in recent months, it is not a foregone conclusion that we can make it without a lot of support from new listeners and old listeners and people who haven't given in a long time. So if you're one of those 1 in 8 people who listens and has not made a pledge to KPFA before, this is a great time to do it.
And Betty actually donated the copies of the books that we'll be offering to our listeners. The audio that we're going to hear today is from an interview that I did with Betty at her very first book signing. As everybody here in the Women's Magazine, I have another daytime job. In my daytime job, I'm the director of a women's resource center. And so I hosted her through that and had an interview with her and a conversation about her book. And we'll be bringing you some snippets of that this afternoon. So I hope you enjoy it.
We're going to start with a little clip from a video interview with Betty done by the feminist media project Makers. Let's listen.
I get to sit on a kitchen stool in a federal government uniform in a little theater sharing my truth. They put a soapbox under my feet and a microphone in my hand, and I get to get even. Dick expectations for Black women when I was growing up was that you became a domestic servant or would work in agriculture. And that would have been my choice, or at least my fate. Except that I married Mel Reed. Mel was in his senior year at the University of San Francisco, playing left halfback for the San Francisco Dons. And what 19-year-old wouldn't prefer that? So I completely escaped that life of servitude. I worked in a Jim Crow segregated union hall. I stood at my little window making change of addresses for the people lined up at my window. And I really assumed that all the shipyard workers were Black, because the only people I saw were the people who came to my window. It was the time when formal racial segregation entered my life. Mel and I thought nothing of going out and buying a lot in the suburbs, but without realizing those people are out there to get away from people like us. And we went through 5 years of death threats. My third grader was the only Black kid in the school the semester that we moved into our new house. The fundraiser of the PTA that year was a minstrel show, and all of the teachers and the administrators were in blackface. That was suburban life in 1953. 20 years later, that same community sent me to represent them as the McGovern delegate to the Miami Convention. Recognized the sites that formed the park were all sites of racial segregation. There was nobody in that room that had any reason to know that but me. And I realized there was no intention to leave my history out, but my history would never be told, and that there were so many stories that were not being told. There's a rich Mexican-American history. There's a Japanese-American history. This was all American history. And so I became actively involved in the early plans to be sure that that history was not omitted. At this point, I'm working a 5-hour day, 5 days a week. I give 3 to 5 presentations in our little theater. Little, because it's only a 48 seat. I sell out like Hamilton, you know. It is my honor to present to you the President of the United States.
Thank you, Betty, for that introduction, for your extraordinary service.
I am still having first experiences at 96. I wake every morning and shoot out of bed because I can't wait to see what next week is. I don't expect to retire at all. I'm going to go straight from the park to the cemetery.
Betty Reed Soskin is in so many ways a Jane of all trades. At the age of 96, she's the oldest National Park Ranger in the United States, and quite possibly the world. She works at the Rosie the Riveter Shipyard Museum in Richmond, California. Betty says she doesn't believe in retirement, that she stays young at heart by reinventing herself. This is perhaps why her life accomplishments are vast. She's an entrepreneur, a songwriter, a musician, a mother of four, a park ranger, a blogger, a lifetime activist, and now an author.
There's hope in the knowledge that many ordinary Americans are now beginning to see the fallacy in white supremacy, and that its protection cannot be maintained without sacrificing democracy itself.
Betty Reed Soskin says she has lived into the future that she helped create.
Though I was an activist in the 60s, in the civil rights revolution at the national level, I'm now living in the future that I helped to create. Those people protesting are now of every color, every ethnicity, every economic class. They're marching as Americans. It is an amazing thing to have lived through. I've lived into a time when I have lost my sense of future because I've outlived most of my peers. Having done so, I've gained instead an enhancement of a sense of the past. Now I know that this democracy has been going through these periods of chaos since 1776. They're cyclical. That is when the democracy is being redefined. That is when the reset buttons are accessible to us. And rather than being depressed by what's going on in the country at the moment, I'm finding, to the contrary, that I am hopeful. Hopeful because all the things that characterize so much of my life, because I knew my slave ancestor, I knew her until I was 27 years old when she died, and she died at 102.
And that's your great-grandmother?
My great-grandmother. I knew her, and all of the American history from the Dred Scott decision to Black Lives Matter is encapsulated in the voices of my great-grandmother, my mother, and myself, because we lived all of that history from 1846 to the present time.
I asked Betty how she continues to find hope in the face of immense racial tensions across the country.
Because having lived through the history that I've lived through, what I see, more than the chaos that we're seeing, that we're living in now, more than that, I'm seeing that the whole nation is seeing and sharing in the ugliness that's been known only to a portion of us. When the Tiki Torch Parade in Charlottesville happened, I was feeling elated because that was finally out in the open where it could be dealt with. I am so concerned when I hear people say, that's not who we are, because from my way of looking at it, that is precisely who we are. And as long as we're in denial, we can never get at that part of us that needs to be corrected. And I think that that's what's happening to us.
The title of Betty's book, Sign My Name to Freedom, is taken from a song she wrote in the 60s.
During 1964, Freedom Summer 64, I was experiencing the Black Revolution as a middle-class Black woman living in the suburbs in an otherwise white community, while being connected to the Black Revolution throughout the country. Just as I was, and my family were the focal point for people who were resistant to change, we were also targets for those people who were liberal wanting to validate themselves by associating with us, so that we became the darlings of the liberal movement in the area. One of those people was in the Unitarian Church. His name was Don Sanford. He was heading the Social Services Department at it in Marin County. One of his daughters, Susan Sanford, left school. She was a freshman at Cal, to join the Freedom Movement to teach in Canton, Mississippi, Freedom School for that summer, summer 64. And the night before Susan left, she was 18, I had dinner with the family and gave Susan my pearls that I had received as a wedding gift from my husband to wear under her T-shirts, because I couldn't go to Mississippi because I was a mother at that time of four children and couldn't afford to do that. But she could, and she could be my presence in that struggle. She would send letters home to her family. And I imagined Susan, who was living with a Black family, a woman in Mississippi, as she was teaching in the Freedom School, and they were under grave threat. That was the summer, as you might remember, the three freedom riders who were killed by the Klan. I imagined a woman who must have been deeply puzzled because she had SNCC workers staying in the home under grave threat with her, sharing the house. And I wrote a song, the words of which assigned my name to Freedom in honor of that woman. It still personified for me that whole struggle. Maybe if I could remember it, I could quote the lyrics.
That would be awesome.
Monday morning, streets are bare. I don't know why they don't want me nowhere. Since I went to the courthouse and signed my name for freedom. Daughters say mustn't run. Sound the trumpets, the kingdom's come. Mama, go to the courthouse. Got to sign your name to freedom. Fields of fire, cotton flaming neath the summer sky. Shrouds of white, no name naming. They don't know this dream can't die. Churches burned, deacon dead. Still I know it's like daughter said. Ain't no turning back now. I done signed my name to freedom. Young folks here around my table talking through the night. Faces here I can't label. Brown ones blending with the white. Sunday morning, church ain't there. Bombed it Wednesday, but I can't care. God was down at the courthouse. Day I signed my name to freedom. My Lord was down at the courthouse. Day I signed my name.
We just heard Betty Reed Soskin talking about her history. I'd asked her a question about how she came up with the title of her book, which is called Sign My Name to Freedom. And she was reciting the lyrics from a song that she wrote and sang in the 60s. And the great part is that her son graciously found the audio from the song that she was singing back in the 60s called Sign My Name to Freedom. And we have that. I want to mention before we play you that song that this is a great time for you to call us and make a pledge. You can call in at 1-800-439-5732. Any amount will do, but $125 will get you a signed copy of Betty Reed Soskin's memoir, Sign My Name to Freedom.
And, you know, $125 is like $10 a month. And I think when I think about all of the things that I waste $10 on every month, not one of them is as valuable to me on the daily basis as the programming here at KPFA.
Right.
And programming like this, you know, interviews and conversations with people we're so lucky to have in our community and we're so lucky to know. And you've known Betty a long time, and I want to hear a little about how you actually first met her, but we do need to raise some money. So
let's do that. Let's have some people start calling in. That would be great. Let's remind you of that phone number one more time. The number is 1-800-439-5732. Let's earn some money. Let's show everybody that you care about this show. Vote with your dollars and help promote this good work. Help keep us on the air.
And if it's easier for you to do, you can also go to kpfa.org and donate securely online. Anything that you donate during this hour will support Women's Magazine and help us to keep bringing you the kind of programming that you've come to rely on from us, women that you don't often hear on a lot of other shows, even here in the Progressive Bay Area, and even in these days when women's voices are getting amplified more. A lot of the women that you hear on our show don't make it onto mainstream airwaves. So we're going to listen to that song. It's a great song to give money by. You enjoy this song by Betty Reed Soskin, go to your computer and call up kpfa.org, make that donation, or call 1-800-439-5732.
Monday morning, streets are bare. Seems as high. They don't want me nowhere.
Yes, I went to the courthouse and signed my name to freedom. Daughter, say, mustn't run. Sound the trumpets, the kingdom's come. Mama, go to the courthouse. Got to sign your name to freedom. Feels a fire, cotton flaming beneath the summer sky. Churches burn, deacon dead. Still I know, it's like daughter said. Ain't no turning back now. I done signed my name to freedom. Young folks here, Sunday morning, church ain't there. Bombed it Wednesday, but I can't care. God was down at the courthouse day I signed my name to freedom. My Lord was down at the courthouse.
That was so awesome.
Yeah, isn't that so cool? It's so interesting to kind of hear the difference between her reciting these words right now in 2018 and to be able to listen to her audio from the 1960s is quite a treat.
How'd you get that audio?
So her son, Bob Reed, is now her full-time agent. She has so many gigs and so many people who want to hear her speak and want to hear her story and want her to make an appearance. So he's now helping her out. And I met with both of them when they came to St. Mary's College, and I asked if they'd consider sharing it, and they said they would. They really do value actually this program, and they thought it was important that KPFA and the Women's Magazine have a chance to air it. They're not sharing the music very broadly at this point. There will be something coming of it later, but that will be a surprise from what I understand.
That's so cool. So that's really something special.
Yes.
That you get because of the relationship that Sharon has built with Betty. And I mean, in 2010, when you first interviewed her, I had never heard of her. I think hardly anyone had heard of her. She wasn't well known like she is now. How did you end up meeting her?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting story. So I mentioned earlier, I work in a women's center, and we're all about this thing that we call shine theory, which means amplifying the voices of other women and giving credit where credit is due. So I'm going to give credit to a colleague of mine from that time. Her name was Louise Gokel. And she said, this is a kind of cool woman. She does some leadership things, and I think it's a voice that maybe you haven't heard before. So I said, cool, let's bring her. And we brought her to campus, and I was just awestruck by her and her energy and how articulate she was and the depth of her stories. And so I asked if I could have an interview. So that year in 2010, I went and sat with Betty in her living room, and I think we had a 2.5-hour conversation. Like, that's the thing you are probably picking up on from listening to her here, or if you've ever had a chance to hear her speak. She is really a gifted orator. I was mentioning to Kate earlier, she doesn't ever utter the word, for example. She's just a really good storyteller, and has such a sharp memory. She's living history.
This memoir is actually a collection of blog posts that she's written over like the last 10 years or something. And so she started this blog when I think she was 85 or something. And I mean, she personifies someone who just charges into the next phase of life and of technology and, you know, is totally not one of those people that says, okay, I've been doing this a long time, I'm just going to keep doing what I know. Like, she embraces every new challenge in a way that I just hope I can do when I'm her age. And, you know, I think it's so cool that you've created this relationship with her and that we kind of have the opportunity to get to know her through you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really lucky. And she says that she reinvents herself every decade. So every time I interview her, I ask her what her newest life lesson is, because she's constantly reinventing herself and watching for surprises and living by them. And I remember the first time I spoke with her, she talked about maybe she was going to do something with her blog in some way. So maybe she'd self-publish so her kids would remember her stories. And, you know, this is night and day different than that, right? She's taken it in a whole new level, and not in a way that she expected at all. And actually, in the next clip we're going to hear, she will talk about her process to writing this book and how it all came together for her.
Let's go and listen to that now. Just, I want to give the numbers one more time. 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. To call and make your pledge. If you can give $125, we'll be really happy to send you a signed copy of Betty Reed Soskin's book, Sign My Name to Freedom. If that's too much for you or you're not interested in the book, there are many other thank you gifts that we can offer at different levels. And, you know, if you just want to make a donation of any size, $10, $25, $40, whatever you can give will be so important to, one, letting us know that this station and this show is important to you, and two, to help keep the lights on, keep the transmitter transmitting, keep us being able to come in here and make programming that we think you'll enjoy. 1-800-439-5732, kpfa.org. I'm going to shut up now and let's listen to Betty Reed Soskin talking about her life and her memoir and how she came to write this memoir, Sign My Name to Freedom.
What did you learn about yourself from taking on this endeavor of writing a book, and talk about maybe how it came about for you?
That book came about because I did the Tavis Smiley show, and he became interested in my story and came up and visited the park, took me to lunch, and asked me if I would write a book for Hay House, his publisher. I'd never thought of writing a book, but had been blogging since 2003 as a way of leaving a record of my life for my children, because I had done a family history about 15 years ago, and I was frustrated by the fact that the women kept getting lost because their names changed or the circumstances change and they drop out, and I wanted to leave a record for my kids of my life as I had lived it. So I began to blog in 2003, and I'm still blogging. But he convinced me that I didn't have to write a book, that they could assign an editor to pull the book out of my blog. Also, the Bancroft Library had 12 hours of oral history, so that an editor, Jesse Douglas Allen Taylor, pulled together the oral histories and selected passages from the blog and formed Sign My Name to Freedom. So that I really feel like I cheated.
It was just a long time coming, it sounds like. Betty says she remembers precisely when and how she found the power to use her voice to advocate for change. It was some 5 decades ago in the Diablo Valley.
I think it happened here in the Diablo Valley. We built a home in 1953 in the Saranac area, Walnut Creek, between Lafayette and Walnut Creek. My husband was a man who had grown up in California as a Californian because his family had come here in the 18, well, before the Civil War, actually. He was a third generation Californian, and I had grown up in California from the age of six, so that we had no sense of place, that we could, but that we shouldn't have moved into the suburbs because we were not a part of the Great Migration for the Second World War, but we're already in place. And we built a house in an area after having a white person purchase the property for us. We figured that they would get used to that. They would know once we were there, they'd get to like us. For about 5 years, we withstood the rejection. It made a lot of difference in our lives. It certainly did for me. And then after 5 years, there was a time when I saw an article in the newspaper that a young couple, a truck driver and his nurse's aide wife, young black couple, were moving into Pleasant Hill in one of the Pleasant Hill lower income places. And the Improvement Association was getting together to see that that didn't happen. And though I had been less than effective in supporting my own right to be there and had been fearful much of the time, I could deal with the rejection of this couple as a defender. And after I read the article in the newspapers announcing the Improvement Association's meeting, decided that I was going to go and tell those people that all they needed was enough time and that I had done this 5 years before and that my community had gotten used to it and that this would pass. And I did go to that meeting after being warned that I shouldn't. And I sat in the meeting because I had told the friend that I could go because no one ever said those nasty things in the face of a black person, that my color, my skin would protect me. And he said, "No, you must not do that, Betty. You will be hurt." And I said, "No, I can do this." And I went out and I sat in that room in a grammar school auditorium, figuring that I would give my message and protect this young couple that I had never met, and sat through a meeting where no one recognized me as African American. And they went on with their meeting as if I were not in the room. And I heard for the first time all those awful things that I'd been spared because I had not heard them, literally. We had received letters objecting to our presence. But my neighbors are too polite to hear say those things. But I sat and watched and listened while the most vile things were being said. And finally, when someone finally got up and said, "If we can't get the undesirable niggers out of here any other way, we can use the health department on the basis of the nasty diseases they bring in." At which point, I got up and walked to the front of the room. And I said, "I don't want to eavesdrop anymore." I identified myself. And I went on for about 10 minutes and explained that that couple had a right to be there, that they were going to get over it. And suddenly I panicked and I ran out of the auditorium, got in my car, and realized that I had not made a difference, except that I had. That Improvement Association never met again. That couple did move in, but they didn't stay because they were so badly treated. But that was when I found my voice. I could find it through defending someone else. That same community, 20 years later, sent me to represent them as a McGovern delegate to the Miami Convention. That's how fast social change was occurring in the Bay Area. But that's when I found my voice.
So that was in the 50s?
That was in the 50s.
That puts you at what age at that time?
Oh, I don't think about age.
Not a college age.
I was at that time a mother of three children. And so I must have been in my mid-30s.
Awesome. And astounding to think that that was a thing just in the 50s. That doesn't seem like that long ago.
But when you realize that the Lovings, who married and were jailed for having done so across race lines in Virginia, that was 1967. This history is not that old. That was 1967. And it was in 1953, I think, that we built our house. And that was the year that at Park Mead School in Walnut Creek, there was the minstrel show. And that night, I went and sat in the front row. And they had to perform the minstrel show in my presence, because they had to know. But I did find my voice. And that voice I'm using now as a permanent park ranger at Rosie the Riveter National Park in Richmond. I see in my audiences mostly that we are ready for these conversations after having spent the last 8 years under the Obama administration, that we are ready now to have those conversations. But every now and then, as there was about a month ago, when a woman had listened to my talk, had seen the film, and then she, at the Q&A, raised her hand and she said, "Excuse me, but why don't you speak like other black people?" And a strange thing happened. At first, I didn't know how to answer her, but there was an audible gasp in the audience when she asked the question. And I realized that it was she who was out of place and that I was inside the circle, and that the people in that audience were hearing her question the same way I was, and that this probably meant that she was from another part of the country, and that the people in that room were all Bay Area people who had grown up with me.
Hey, everybody, this is Kate, rudely interrupting your enjoyment of Betty Reed Soskin's discussion with Sharon Sobota. It's really hard for me to interrupt because I'm really loving hearing this, but we're going to get back to listen to a little bit more of Betty's talk in a few minutes. I just need to remind you right now that we are in a fundraising period. We have a goal for this hour of $1,500, and we need to get a lot more calls if we're going to make that. We have 10 donated signed copies of Betty's memoir, Sign My Name to Freedom, to offer you during this hour as a thank you for your donation to KPFA of $125 or more, which I know sounds like a lot, but it's just $10 a month. About 30 cents a day. 30 cents a day that gets you a book that you will treasure, a book that's preserving the living history of women in the Bay Area through the voice of this extraordinary Bay Area icon. And you will treasure it even more because it also helps ensure that KPFA continues to be here for the next few years, hopefully longer than that, and that we'll be able to bring you a lot more voices of local activists and writers. 1-800-439-5732. KBFA.org is how you can make that donation. Betty was talking about finding her voice. And, you know, KBFA helps so many people in so many ways to find their voices by training apprentices to do radio production, by inviting people on the air, people who aren't famous, but who are working to change their communities. I can't tell you how many women I've interviewed who said, "This is the first time I've ever been interviewed." 1-800-439-5732. 510-848-5732, or go online to kpfa.org. And Sharon and I, you know, we have found our voices. through the work that we've been able to do here at KPFA. We're going to go back to that interview in just a minute. Sharon, you've interviewed Betty a bunch of times and you've gotten to know her really well. So what's the thing that surprised you the most about Betty Reed Soskin?
There are so many things that surprise me and have me in awe of Betty constantly. For one thing, she is constantly reinventing herself every decade, she says, but I think it's happening more frequently now. But the thing that really is intriguing to me, her name is Betty Reed Soskin, and she often goes by Betty. And I was asking her about that and asking her about, you know, like, should I shorten your name? Should I call you Soskin when I'm referring to you? And she said, no, Betty is good. She had one husband whose last name was Reed and another later in life whose last name was Soskin. And both of her husbands passed away in the 80s after the marriages had ended. And also her father passed away. And she said after that period, she was extremely sad and then did a personal inventory and realized that she had been really kind of dependent on her marriages to define herself. And so it was after that, in the late 80s, that she went through this personal journey to figure out, who am I? Who is Betty Reed Soskin and what am I all about? And that's what this next clip is about. And before we play it for you, I just want to use this as one more chance to remind you to call us, 1-800-439-5732. Help Kate and I amplify more voices like Betty Reed Soskin's, because that is what the Women's Magazine is all about. Call us now or go online and make your pledge at kpfa.org.
I was married at 20 to Mel Reed, a man who I met at 14. I was 14, he was 17. He was, at that point, I think in his senior year at the University of San Francisco. That marriage lasted for about 35 years, produced four children, and ended when I was about 49, late 40s. And my second marriage was to Bill Soskin, who was Dr. William F. Soskin, an illustrious professor from the University of California, research psychologist. That marriage made me a faculty wife on the university campus, and I got a non-traditional PhD, which we called the pillow PhD. That was an amazing period of travel and exposures that I grew in off new edges that I didn't even know existed before then. All of those men, my father, whom I loved dearly, my first husband, and my second husband all died in the year 1987, within 3 months. And I had been completely defined by the men in my life. I had no idea, because I didn't go to college, which meant that I had never had life as a woman before I became a mother. So that period that you people who are on campus live, I had never lived through until I was 50. And it wasn't until that period of intense grief for about 3 months, and then right behind that was this burst of emancipation. And I've been spinning in space ever since, being Betty the individual, being the woman in me. And I think that now that I'm 96, I have the distinct feeling that I'm being all of the women that I ever was. Right now, that I'm using everything that I ever had, everything that I ever learned, and that each of the women that I have been is triggered either by songs, by something I read, by a snatch of music, by something one of my kids says, and all of the affect of that period comes. It has led to a 96-year-old, very, very rich life, because I'm in all of those women right now.
Retirement to Betty is a fallacy. She says she plans to go from the park to the cemetery.
I keep asking at the park, you know, when are you going to have the what are we going to do with the old lady meeting? And they keep saying, not yet, Betty. So I think that I'll probably work until I don't want to work anymore. But I think that retirement is a kind of a fallacy. If you want to do it, fine. I'm not sure that I could have done it because I was a late starter. I didn't have my first significant job until I was 50. I raised four kids to adulthood before I had a job. So that I'm a late bloomer, so that I'm still catching up.
And that connects to my other question. Yeah. Sometimes people will say that they had some dream or they had some vision and it's too late, they didn't do it. And what do you say to those
people? I know, I am living my entire life in a constant state of surprise. I am still having first experiences at 96. I have sat in a conference room at the park and had a Skype session with a class of juniors in Eugene, Oregon. I participated in a panel at the annual flower show in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. As long as life is unfolding for me, I don't see any reason to retire.
So the moral of the story is, it's never too late.
No. Keep your resume polished up.
Because you always reinvent yourself, I never end an interview without asking you the most important lesson that you've learned on your journey thus far. So what is it today?
That's easy. There is a place on the film that the National Park Service developed where a Rosie, who lives in Rossmore, and she says that period was the greatest coming together of the American people that she had ever lived through. And when the film was first released to us, I used to stand against the wall and watch the faces of the audience as she uttered those words, and I'd think, how can Agnes say that? She knows that isn't true. I've got to speak to that woman. And one day, after my 90th birthday, I was suddenly able to hear that that was Agnes's truth, and that there were many truths, that we all create our own reality, and that there are truths that rise out of religious conviction, and they rise out of education, they rise out of life experience, that many of those truths are in conflict, but nonetheless true. And I realized that as long as there was a place on the planet where Agnes's truth and mine could coexist, that that was going to be enough for me from that day forward. And for me, that's the park that I'm working at. And I get to share that insight with the 14-year-olds that come through, which I consider a real privilege. So they don't have to get to be 90 years old before they discover that. That probably is the most important lesson I've learned in the last decade.
The existence of multiple truths.
Yes.
Betty Reed Soskin in conversation with Sharon Sobota. That was the first book signing that she did for this new memoir, which has just come out, and that was at St. Mary's College where Sharon works, and the reason why Sharon has built this relationship with Betty. We're so lucky to have that audio and 10 copies of Betty's book to offer as thank you gifts for your donations to KPFA and Women's Magazine today. 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. Don't wait. Call now and let us know that you're listening. Let us know that this show is important to you and that this radio station is important to you.
And we are getting a few calls so far, and we'd love to have more. So will you be the next one? Will you go to your phone right now and make a pledge? Pledge with your dollars. 1-800-439-5732.
You know, National Geographic calls Betty Reed Soskin a powerful voice for helping people process history while protecting historic spaces for future generations. And I think KBFA is really a historic space that needs to be protected for future generations. And Betty thinks so, too. And that's why she donated these copies, signed copies of her memoir, Sign My Name to Freedom, because, you know, she's really somebody who appreciates the importance of passing on our experience, our oppression, our struggle, our resilience to the next generation. And KPFA is part of doing that. I mean, part of what we're doing here is creating an archive that will live long past any of us, hopefully, and that future generations can use to get hope when they're in despair, to understand more about the movements that we've lived through, you know, that they'll just have been reading about in history books. And this is a way that we can bring that history alive, you know, so somebody listening to Betty talk about the freedom struggle will appreciate it in a different way. And listening to her talk about what it was like to be a woman in the 40s and what opportunities there were for African American women then and how things have changed and how they stayed the same and right. living through the lynching period, how she relates that to Black Lives Matter. I mean, all of that is so important and so important to make sure that these voices are still here in 70, 100 years.
Now, we've been talking a lot about Betty's book, and so what better way to really get a flavor for the book than to hear her read a little piece of it? And we also want to encourage you to, as you're enjoying it, think about getting this book and really having a piece of history, and I might add a signed piece of history, and keeping this legacy alive. Order the book, support us on the Women's Magazine. You can do that by calling 1-800-439-5732. You can also pledge securely online at kpfa.org. So in this next clip we're going to share with you, you'll hear Betty reading from her epilogue.
My voice may be so atypical, with such an atypical story to tell, that there will be no audience waiting to know. A hybrid of the times. After all, I'm still working my way out of feeling as though racially I'm nothing. But I finally decided that in fact I'm really everything. And it's a wonderful thing to be, after all. At least that's the way I see my beautifully blended grandchildren. My life experiences are in many ways a mirror of those of countless other African Americans who are members of the middle class, brought up to middle class mores and values. We're often the beneficiaries of a wide variety of cultures by virtue of miscegenation and greater access to socio-political life, and are often placed in positions that allow us to affect social change disproportionately. If we opt to use them in that way, we find ourselves being sought after to validate racial diversity on boards and commissions everywhere, often for the simple reason that we're seen as not like those others. Many of us fall prey to ego by believing that we represent more than that. One of the most painful lessons I learned in life as a Black woman in the white suburbs was that the concept of a middle-class Black exists only in the mind of middle-class Black. To most of the rest of the country, a nigger is a nigger is a nigger. An architect-designed home, a back-drawed swimming pool, a wood-paneled station wagon, Armani suits, and vacations in Hawaii or Palm Beach do not a member of the elite make, despite arguments to the contrary. Acceptance is invariably conditional. Perhaps my value and marketability as a writer will lie in the fact that mine may be a relatively unheard voice. Maybe it's one of the voices of the future, a forerunner of a nation forced to write new rules of conduct to cover a country going beige, with new guidelines created to maintain white supremacy in a nation where skin color, or lack thereof, is fast losing power to control governance. It's a revolutionary thought, and one that is already bending the rules of the game. There's hope in the knowledge that many ordinary Americans are now beginning to see the fallacy in white supremacy, and that its protection cannot be maintained without sacrificing American democracy itself.
You can tell from that reading how deep and fascinating Betty Reed Soskin's writing and experience is. The fact that it's blog posts means you really share her life. It's very much in the moment. It's living history, which is what Betty calls her life and her memoir and her writing. Living history is what we try to provide here at KPFA, and you can be part of it you're part of it because you're our listeners, but you can become part of carrying it on and ensuring that it's here for the next year and the next 96 years, and that KBFA can host the future Bettys of our community by calling now to pledge your support, 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. Sharon and I were joking around yesterday about how much we get paid around here, which is nothing. And that's fine with us because we gain so much from the experience of creating shows for you. But just because we're not paid doesn't mean that it's free to produce this show. There's computers and headphones and the very expensive production equipment. And let me tell you, ours hasn't been upgraded nearly as recently as it should be. To keep up with changing technology, to expand our digital platform, which we really need to do in order to survive, we need your help. 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. You can always give securely online at kpfa.org. Just $125 will get you a signed copy of Betty's book, Sign My Name to Freedom, which is not only a wonderful addition to your library, but something you can pass on to future generations as part of your own living history. And something else you can give them as a piece of living history is KPFA. The archives, the wealth of materials and voices and documents of struggles that you might have participated in but barely remember now. You know, just the other day, I got this email from somebody asking, a scholar asking, if I remembered a group from the 1990s called Lesbians in Solidarity with the Palestinian People, LISP. And I asked a few of my friends who I had worked with in those days. None of us really remembered that group, but I looked in my files and I found a flyer for a forum at the Women's Building sponsored by LISP, and it had my friend's phone number on it. And she herself didn't even remember that forum. So we need to have documents. We need to have records of our history because we think our memories are perfect, but they really are not. And we need these audio documents to go back to. We really need to get about 10 more calls before the end of the hour. And I know that seems like a lot, because we don't have much time left, but I think we can do it and you can help us. So please go to your phone now, 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732, or go to your computer, kpfa.org. It's just as good. And you can request any thank you gift that you want, and your donation will still count towards the Women's Magazine total for this hour to show that this programming, this kind of interview, like what you've heard with Betty Reed Soskin, is important to you. So please be part of our community, be part of our history. Help us keep telling your stories.
$25 will get you a membership that will make you a member of the station if $125 is too much for you. Although we really want to rally around this book because Kate and I really believe in it, and I think you will too. The number is 510-848-5732. I want to thank everyone who's donated so far. There's been several of you. We want to encourage you to keep calling. We really would appreciate that. Our number again is 1-800-439-5732. Thank you to Betty Reed Soskin for generously donating 10 signed copies of her book, Sign My Name to Freedom, for the Women's Magazine. And thank you to the fabulous Erica Bridgman at the controls. You can donate for a few more minutes and your gift will count towards keeping the Women's Magazine on the air. The number again, it's 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732, or kpfa.org if you want to pledge securely online. We are so thankful for all of our listeners, and thank you to all of those who have supported us. With Kate Raphael, I'm Sharon Sabota. Thank you so much for your support today. Stay tuned for About Health.